we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you as we kick off another week here on the team website. We'll be recapping the Cowboys game, a heartbreaking loss for the Giants last night at Big D, 27-26. We'll get your phone calls in at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat. And Jeff, certainly not the way the Giants wanted to see this game come to an end, as Tony Romo and company went 6 plays, 72 yards, an 11-yard touchdown pass to Jason Witten. It literally brought back memories of what happened at MetLife Stadium last season.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I think that, you know, if you're going to take the silver lining out of this game, I was impressed by the defense. I thought that they came out and they played a good game with the exception to those last two drives. And you got young guys in the football game that have never started an NFL game making calls, both at the safety position and the linebacking position. Both those guys did a wonderful job. Unga comes out of the game with 12 tackles, an interception, showed his inexperience on that game-winning touchdown to Witten, playing behind him. You know, that the rule there is you never let that guy get in front of you. And unfortunately, it went down that way. But certainly, Lance, a lot to work on coming out of this game. The most important thing that the Giants have to understand, that this is it's one game. You have the rest of the season. The Giants are not going to miss the playoffs because of this game. They're not going to go home. They got to come back and regroup. And I've been around a lot of games in my career when you come into work on Monday like this and had that type of a loss. It's tough, but football players have to have short memories. They'll come in today. They got in late. They're, you know, adding insult to injury. You know, the plane that they're going to leave out of Dallas last night ends up having problems with the evacuation slide, and they sit on the tarmac for 3 hours. You know, so but the fact they got to come in here and regroup. They'll have the day off tomorrow. Probably sleep all day. I would if I was them. And come back Wednesday and get ready for this Falcons team. And, you know, you're going to go against the two different types of offensive lines when you talk about the Falcons. I don't want to talk too much about them, but the fact that this offensive line for the Dallas Cowboys is legit.
One of the best.
They are probably the best in the National Football League. Atlanta, not so good. So when we talk about how the Giants could not get a pass rush against Tony Romo last night, well, there's a reason. One, because the offensive line is really, really good. And now when you go into the Atlanta game, we'll see what this defensive line can do. But, you know, one other thing, Lance, I wanted to mention was that, you know, in years past, I have not seen a defense coached like this in a while. When you talk to Spagnuolo's and his experience with the Giants, we know how well he's done in the past. One thing I liked about him is how he makes adjustments, how he gets those guys to play. On the fumble recovery that DRC had, I mean, when he picked that ball up, there was three or four Giants defenders around that football, and I saw those guys flying around to the ball last night, something I didn't see a lot last year, and that comes from Steve Spagnuolo, because if you're not doing that, he's going to sit your butt on the bench and get somebody else in there, and they did a nice job with that.
The defense certainly very aggressive in that first half. Three takeaways overall in the game. It's hard to believe that you lose a game when you have
it
three
is hard
takeaways.
To believe. You go on the road, and you win the turnover battle on the road at plus two, okay? Was it plus two or plus? Yeah, because the Giants did not turn the ball
plus
over.
Plus three. Yeah, they, plus they, were, three. They played clean football.
I'm going to tell you right now, because on Fridays, Coach Coughlin goes over all the statistics that you have to do, what you got to do to win the games. And one of the biggest statistics is the turnover battle. And when you go on the road and win the turnover battle, you're going to win probably 80 to 85% of those games. And certainly it's disgusting that the Giants had to come home with that loss and by leading that category.
In terms of how long it's been since the Giants have dropped a game in which they played essentially clean football, you have to go back to a Ravens game against Baltimore, December 23rd, 2012. The Giants did not have a turnover, ending their streak of six consecutive victories in games in which they had no offensive turnovers. So they had a consistent streak going. They play clean football. It normally dictates a win as opposed to what transpired last night. And you brought up the pass rush, Jeff, and I know a lot of people are talking about that. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of calls calls about that. Mm-hmm. I think what can't be overlooked, the Cowboys' game plan yesterday was we're not going to test the Giants' secondary, which was surprising to both of us.
I'll tell you why when we get into that.
We thought they'd go after the safeties, Landon Collins, the lack of experience. Instead, Romo just took what the defense gave him. He was dumping off to the running backs. Lance Dunbar was the leading receiver last night. He had 8 catches for 70 yards, and the yak stat.
Oh, sure.
The yardage after the catch, I thought, was such a killer yesterday because it wasn't as if the Cowboys were killing the Giants with the deep ball. It was dump it off for 5 or 6 yards, and then some missed tackles late put the Cowboys in a very strong position to score.
And missed tackles all around the league. The first couple weeks of the season is predominant. You can see that happening. But the Giants last night, C. Spagnuolo said, you know what, we're not going to get beat over the top.
Yeah.
We're going to play cover 4, they call it, and it's a kind of umbrella coverage. You know, you're not going to go deep on us. We're going to give you the underneath stuff. If you looked at the way that Prince and DRC were playing their coverage man-on-man outside, they were not letting those guys get down the sideline. Everything was pushed to the middle of the field, and that's where you saw that dink and dunk come from that he executed very well. However, you know, that the defense wasn't able to stop them on those last two plays. But, you know, very basic, and I think that was smart by Steve Spagnuolo. You got a rookie safety back there, a rookie middle linebacker. You got young guys in the lineup. Keep it simple. And I know that I read an article, or at least it was, I can't remember exactly where it was from, but Steve Spagnuolo went back and looked at that 2007-08 season and was trying to understand why the team got off to such a slow start. If you remember, we were 0-2. I was on that team. We gave up 80-something points, I believe it was, in the first two games.
Yeah.
And it was it was tough. He went back and looked at that, and I think that what he took from that is we're going to simplify things while I am installing a new defense. Rather than putting all this heavy stuff in for these guys, let's keep it basic and see what we can do. And it worked out well, other than the two drives at the end of the game.
Now, the defense got you a score.
Yeah.
They got you takeaways. Essentially, at the end, maybe they ran out of gas. That perhaps is one reason. Lack of a pass rush certainly contributed, but as we mentioned, I think Dallas did a nice job countering that, and their offensive line is one of the best in the league, so you have to take that into consideration. But I think when you look at this game, Jeff, you know, a lot of the fans are trying to pinpoint, well, who should we blame? You can look at it, there were some offensive miscues, there were defensive miscues. And certainly that third and goal play from the one, Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning on the record saying, hey, if they could go back, they would certainly rethink their decision-making so that they would take more time off the clock. That's understandable. But at the same time, yes, you gave Tony Romo and company a number of minutes here to move down the field. But all you have to do, Jeff, is hold them to a field goal, and you at least force overtime.
Sure.
They went 6 plays, 72 yards. So that's why I say I think that you could point to things on the defensive side
of
the
ball
as well as the offensive
side. You always can. And you know, you're going to get the guys that you draw the line in the sand and you say, why did you do this on this side and why didn't you do this on this side? In my opinion, the Giants went for the juggler on that play when they threw the ball. They wanted to score a touchdown there. They had a play that they thought they could execute and work. The play was supposed to go to Daniel Fells, who, by the way, was mugged in the end zone. I don't know how the officials didn't see that. They score that touchdown there. It's a 2-possession game with less than a minute and a half left in the game. The Giants win there. I think, to me, that was kind of the mindset there. The other one is knowing that when you're in that situation, this is where it gets hairy. When you're in that situation and that play doesn't work, what are you supposed to do? And obviously we saw what happened. The other side of the coin is the guys that say, you know what, let's run the ball 4 times down there. Give us our best chance to get the ball in the end zone by running it and taking time off the clock. If we don't score, we make them go, well, they don't have to go 99 yards because that would be a touchdown. Okay, they only got to go probably 35 yards, down to the 35-yard line to kick a field to put it into overtime. And you never know what happens there. So a lot of ways to think about this. But the bottom line here is the fact that Coach Coughlin and Eli Manning both told you that it was mismanaged from the get-go. And I'm telling you what, Lance, it wasn't mismanaged from that point where it was first and goal. It was mismanaged, in my opinion, when you got inside the 4-minute drill where there was still the ball being snapped with 10, 12, 13 seconds left on the clock in that drill. You have certain rules in a 4-minute. You don't go out of bounds. You want to keep the clock running, okay? You'll take a sack. You got to make first downs. These are the things that you work on, and every team has a 4-minute package in their arsenal, and it has to be practiced and addressed every single week.
The other thing I want to get to before we head to the phone lines, you know, a lot of people want to weigh in at 201-939-4513. And, Jeff, you and I discussed this last night on our Giants Radio Network postgame show. There was a lot of confusion over the rules regarding why did the Cowboys get a timeout back? Why did the play clock stop? So I want to read it to our audience here in case you weren't necessarily listening on the radio. Mike Pereira last night, who's the former head of officials, he threw out the rule on Twitter. The clock stops and stays stopped until the snap on all penalties inside of the 2-minute mark of the second quarter and 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, even if declined. So if you go back to the play-by-play of this Giants drive that Jeff was just alluding to when the Giants are trying to milk clock, trying to preserve that lead, and there were two penalties on this drive. You had one against Jeremy Mincy, which was the unnecessary roughness penalty when he knocked the helmet off.
Was that before or after the timeout? Or that before or after the play, I should say.
In terms of which play?
The personal foul against Mincy was after.
That was after the play. Okay. The play stopped, and then there was some extracurricular activities. Yep. So Mincy knocks off the helmet of Eric Flowers.
And that was a running play, by the way.
Correct.
Okay.
That was
And everybody else, I'm just trying to, in everybody else's mind, they're thinking the clock should still continue to run because it's a running play. But then what you said, it now clarifies why it did stop and whatever. Okay, so that's one.
Under 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. Play stops on a penalty, whether it's declined or accepted. Then the other situation was 3rd and 14, Manning over the middle, sliding catch by Odell Beckham. They get the first down. Okay, hey, a new set of downs. So you figure, all right, the clock's going to continue. Giants can milk some clock. He didn't go out of play. Penalty on DeMarcus Lawrence, offsides. Once again, here's the rule. Under 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, penalty, clock stops, whether the penalty is declined or accepted.
And in both situations, one was accepted. Because they ended up adding the 15-yard penalty on the Mincy play.
That was applied, correct.
And then the one pass to Odell Beckham for a first down, it was declined. So depending if it was accepted or declined, regardless, inside the 5 minutes in the second half of the game, the clock stops and it starts when they snap the ball, not on the whistle.
Now, you brought up a good point last night, Jeff, and hopefully you can emphasize it here again, the fact that Eli Manning, with respect to the start of the play clock, that there should be better communication perhaps to bring more time down so that you can further milk that.
I thought that on the Mincy play, when they were trying to get the clock, remember they were like, okay, they put 25 seconds on, then it went to 40. They couldn't get the game clock right, and then the referee said put 40 seconds on the clock and reset the game clock to this. Well, the Giants were already at the line of scrimmage when they started the play clock, and they started the 40-second clock. To me, I think you re-huddle there. Okay, get the guys in the huddle and get everybody like 17 seconds. You break the huddle and get up to the line of scrimmage. If you're an offensive lineman and you're sitting in a three-point stance for 40 seconds, somebody's jumping off sides. That's very uncomfortable. So the natural rhythm of the huddle is to get in huddle, call the play, 15, 16 seconds left, run up there, and then snap the ball with maybe 1 or 2 seconds left. That snap was at 13 or 14 seconds prior to that play. And even more than that was there were some other plays that the ball was snapped with 10 seconds or more on the clock. So you start adding those little 10 seconds up here, 12 seconds up here, 11 seconds, the cumulative effect of it, plus the 40 seconds if they run the ball on third down in the red zone on that play, you might give the Giants or the Dallas Cowboys the ball back with maybe 15 or 20 seconds if you add those up collectively. So a learning experience. I said it last night on our post-game show. Rarely do you see an Eli Manning or a Tom Coughlin make a mental error like that. There's been too many games where we've sat in this position and talked about how none of us knew about the situation, but Tom Coughlin and Eli did, and they took advantage of it. But we're sitting there trying, how did they think about that? It was just very uncharacteristic for those two guys to have that type of a mental breakdown in that time management.
And we were even talking about this off the air. When you look at the previous Cowboys-Giants matchups, just based on history, the Giants are usually the team that delivers in the clutch.
No question.
Whereas the Cowboys have had a lot of mental mistakes that cost them over time.
Listen, if you go back and look at Andy Reid and Jason Garrett over the last 5 years, those guys could write a book on how to mismanage time management.
Timeouts.
Think about
this
it.
This and that, yeah.
And very rarely does this happen in that category with the Giants, because they are a disciplined team. They're well prepared. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things that happens. It happens to everybody. And, you know, hey, listen, I think I'm out of 22 years in the league, I think I shanked four footballs, you know, off the side of my foot It happens. Something's going to happen like that. And, you know, what hurts here is that the Giants had this game won. It was on the road in the division. And that's to me, that's more of what it hurts more about it is the division loss than if it was something else, because they could be sitting here 1-0, going to their first home game this week against Atlanta, having a chance to win that. But the division hurts the most.
Easiest way to win the division, you got to take care of business.
It's the only way you're guaranteed to go to the playoffs is win that division. So that's we'll see. But listen, you got 15 more games to crawl out. Like I said earlier, Lance, the players have short memories. They have to
because they
can't let it linger. They can't let it linger, but you can learn from it. You learn from it today and tomorrow. Wednesday will be another good day.
You can't let one game, one series define your season.
You
especially
can't.
Especially in the first game of the season.
And you know what? It kind of goes back to when I was with the Giants and we played the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football. And Devin Hester, this was years ago. I'm not going to tell you what year it was. I don't remember. But it was just when Devin Hester decided to sit underneath the goalpost. And we were going to try a 53-yard field goal with Jay Feely. And we had rarely practiced that when you kick the ball and it doesn't go over the goalpost, it's a live ball.
Short.
And that you should cover. Well, Devin Hester returned it for a touchdown. And lo and behold, a learning moment, okay? Every Friday, the last field goal in field goal session, you covered. So you learn from this. And not only will the Giants learn from this, all 31 other teams are going to learn from this sequence of what's happening in that situation. You probably won't see it happen again this year.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you on this Monday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's open up the phone lines. Max is in New York City. He gets us going on Monday's edition. Max, what's happening?
Hi, Max.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing well, Max.
I just wanted to comment in. Listen, I feel like yesterday's game was kind of a tricky one to tell, because you could say they blew it, and at the end of the day, they probably did. But generally, when you see a team blow it, especially with the Giants,
yeah,
you see and more along the lines of it panning out as like an interception at the Dallas 30, you know, something like that. This team still drove down the field that last drive. Listen, yeah, they still got the field goal. Yeah, it was a mess up, but you wake up this morning feeling with such a bad loss, because it was. But they really didn't do too much wrong. I think the defense played a great game.
They did.
Ask any more, that defense is unfair. The offense still drove down the field. It's not like they, you know, it was a three and out and they gave Dallas, you know, I don't know how much time that would have been, probably about 2 minutes with the ball. They still drove down the field. They still got the field goal. Listen, it was a tough drive at the end of the game. The defense, you know, has to slow that down a little. Once Tony Romo got the hurry up, there wasn't any stopping him.
Sure.
But really, there's no moral victories in this league, but it wasn't, you know, you saw something. They didn't totally blow it.
And like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm trying to take the silver lining out of this loss, and this kind of goes to your point. I thought there was a lot of good things there. The other fact is that, you know, we're worried about this Giants team being able to run the football in situations in the game. They took that ball down the field by running the football,
yeah,
and they pounded the football against that the Dallas defense to go down there and put themselves in a chance to win the football game. So you make a great point.
They had their most effective runs of the game on that drive.
Absolutely.
Rashad Jennings right through the middle. He got good penetration. Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg really helped open up that line, as well as Eric Flowers. So, I mean, that was a big positive. And, you know, I would agree with you, Max. I think that they did a nice job marching down the field. The difference, though, in this game, as you look back at the numbers, is you got into the red zone 4 times. You only walked away with a touchdown once, whereas Dallas was in the red zone 5 times. They walked away with a touchdown 3 times. And when you lose a game by a point, that's the difference in a contest.
And just 2 more quick things. I wanted to just comment on how I think Vereen really is going to be a big pickup for this team. I can't remember the last time we had like a 3rd and 8 situation and our running back's primary job wasn't to block. You know, it's so nice. And they actually have set plays for Vereen in that situation. And it's so nice. He had such a great game yesterday receiving. We haven't had that in a while. Another point I was just going to make before I hang up is, to me, the special teams really, and I know it's like, you know, such a side point, but the special teams, especially Bradley, really showed yesterday.
Yeah.
That was a big part in that game. Dallas field position, again, when it's Giants, Cowboys, and they're losing the games like this, usually a lot of it's field position. Dallas had to earn what they got. They did not have good field position on that last drive they did. Bradley had some great hang time on some of those punts. Listen, Dallas earned this win. You know, Giants handed it to them, but you know, Giants didn't just let go. They played well towards the end. They just couldn't hang on. But Dallas was probably the better team. They just earned it.
Great call. I agree. You know, the special team started off the game. The Giants kicked off, and they got a stop on the kickoff coverage there. Their next kickoff, you had Waylock making a tackle, Herzlick making tackles,
yeah,
and Brad Wing coming out here and kind of filling in for what Steve Weatherford has not been able to do, and that's directional kick with good hang time and distance and location, and then he banged one out there and inside the 10-yard line on the 7. So, yeah, I mean, the one bonehead play in my mind was Dwayne Harris, as he probably shouldn't have. He tried to make something happen. He was back in Jerry's house, and he wanted to make a play in front of the crowd. But, you know, he's got to be a little bit smarter than that. But that's a good, very good phone call.
Well, I think the returns, what you were just alluding to, you have two punt returns by Harris for a total of 3 yards. So
yeah,
clearly you want to see those numbers improve. What Max, the last caller, was bringing up in terms of the Cowboys' returns, they had 5 kickoff returns for an average of just over 19 yards per return. Not terrible. And then Cole Beasley had just 1 punt return for negative 3 yards.
Yeah.
So coverage was good. Coverage was solid.
Yeah.
You just want to see a little bit more dynamic in terms of your return.
And your kickoff returns, if you're a 19-yard average, you'll lead the NFL all year with that. So, I mean, that number is always over 22, 21, somewhere around in there. So, that's, yeah. Yeah, it's a good start. And, you know, you got those three phases of the game, and you always want to win two of the three. That's usually will win you the game. Two of the three phases and win the turnover battle, that's the recipe for success right there.
And that's why it was such an unusual loss. Because based on what you just said, Jeff, you go down the checklist and you're like, well, the Giants did win two of the three
they
battles.
They did. I think they won on defense. They won on special teams. And offensively, you know, the Giants probably lost that game on the offense. But, you know, you win two or three, and the turnovers, you usually win the football game.
Let's hit up Frank in Virginia Beach. Frank, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going there, John? Jeff Feagles.
It's good. Lance,
hey,
but it's okay. No worries.
I just got two questions. One is for the defense. Going forward, do you believe that we have enough guys on the defensive line to get a good pass rush? I mean, I know the Cowboys got a good, you know, O-line. I'll give them that. But, I mean, Tony Romo, man, he had time to make a sandwich back there. So going forward, I know we got Atlanta next week. Just want to know your feelings on the D-line. And then one question about the offense. As far as the receiver that kept dropping the ball, Preston Parker, he played inconsistent. Do you think Toplin may make a change there and bring a guy in there as that third receiver till Cruz gets back?
Well, the first defensively, you know, listen, I know that the Cowboys are the number one offensive line in the National Football League, but you know what? Those players on the other side of the football are getting paid to get to the quarterback too. So I don't want to use that as a complete excuse that they were, you know, a really good offensive line. They got to make plays down there. And for this defense to be successful, they got to get pressure. And they may not have to get sacks on the quarterback, but you got to get pressure on the quarterback and make him make mistakes. And they didn't do that last night. So I think that's something you're going to see pick up after this week's game coming against the Falcons, who don't have a very good offensive line. And we'll kind of see how they continue to change those guys around. You know, you had Colin Jenkins playing defensive end, Marcus Kuhn. I saw Wynn in there at defensive tackle. You know, so a lot of combinations there. But and DeMontre Moore, you know, he has to have a plan. And to me, I watch him. His plan is just to run in there and do whatever he wants to do. He's got to get in the book and start studying on how to do things and game plan against the guy across from him, because he was nowhere to be found last night. And it just goes to show you how this defense really misses JPP, you know, he's a playmaker. The guy can get in there and make plays, and they got to get pressure. As far as the second question. You know, Preston Parker obviously just didn't get it done last night. And, you know, you can talk all you want about how, you know, he made this team because of the special teams behind his play at receiver. It just goes to show you how important it is for Victor Cruz to get back in this lineup, because, you know, no, they don't respect of Preston Parker in the slot. Trust me, he's not that type of player. You get Victor Cruz in there along with Odell Beckham, now we're talking. So, but he'll tell you he's a tough competitor. I know Coach Coffin likes him a lot. And he's got to continue to get better, but he's got to make some of those plays. Those were crucial third down drops. Those are drive killers.
Yeah, I almost passed out when he dropped that last one. I said, I can't believe it. He just real inconsistent. Last year he was inconsistent as well. You know, and any idea when Cruz is coming back? I know his calf is an issue, but any idea?
Well, Coughlin mentioned he's making progress. He said that at his last presser before this Cowboys game. So, I mean, I think it really depends on how much practice time he perhaps could get in this week or perhaps down the road. I mean, that's going to really dictate when he'll get back on the field. Right now, they just don't want him to have some type of a setback with that calf injury. But Coughlin did mention he's making progress based on the time that he initially got hurt.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, thank you.
All right, Frank. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, Frank.
The other thing I wanted to mention, Jeff, when you were talking about the pass rush, and I would agree with you. The Cowboys' offensive line is one of the best in the league, but you're right. You still need to find ways to get to the quarterback.
They weren't great at protecting Romo last year. You know,
they middle of the pack.
Yeah, middle of the pack, but not nobody touched them.
Untouchable, correct.
Yeah,
I'll
exactly.
give you that. But, I was looking at the numbers last season. The quarterback hits for this game compared to last season, not that different in terms of the Giants' ability to get to Tony Romo because the line has been pretty consistent for Dallas.
Yeah.
But I think what's important, too, is remember, even if you're getting to the quarterback or you're not getting to the quarterback, the other part of your defense still needs to be effective, Jeff.
No question.
So your linebackers, your secondary, you need to play well-disciplined defense. You can't have missed tackles. And with Tony Romo, as we were talking about off the top of the show, with him dumping off the ball quickly, remember, if you send five or six guys, let's say hypothetically, Jeff, to Tony Romo, he dumps it off to Lance Dunbar. Now you're exposing the back end of your defense where those guys have to be in position because one slip-up could turn a 5 or 6 yard catch into a 20 to 25-yard game.
And something you didn't see last night a lot out of the Giants was blitzing. I mean, you had a couple blitzes here. You know, Landon Collins came down and had a blitz he made a tackle on Randall. But that basic coverage last night. Hey, and Steve said, hey, I got you four guys in there. I need seven behind you. You guys got to get some pressure on the quarterback. I thought that DRC and Prince played a really
DRC
good football. Those guys played really well. And you know what? They're good. They're good, and the Giants should be happy to have those two guys as their starting corners. And then the play of Collins and you know you look at Merriweather last night on that big hit he had on Shreve.
Devin Street.
Yeah. What a play! I mean, and you know what? It was a legal hit.
It was helmet on the ball.
Yeah,
that's
and
all
so,
you can ask.
You know, there's a little bit of veteran leadership coming in there, and making a big play and. We were a little bit shocked yesterday when Cooper Taylor was inactive, but now we kind of know, as I started to think about that a little bit more, Lance, and I wasn't able to talk to you much about this last night, it made sense to me because the fact that, you know, what do you want? You want two inexperienced guys back there going against Dez Bryant and Tony Romo. You know, that's a little bit scary. So I think that they got scared themselves. The Giants did and said, you know what? Let's go ahead instead of having two young guys back there, let's at least put somebody that knows what he's doing back there, too. So that's what happened.
Well, what to me jumped out about the defense, and we were talking a little bit about this earlier, compared to perhaps the defenses in recent history, you saw that opportunistic facet of this defense where they're all around the football.
They run and
fly
around.
They're getting their hands on the ball. They're forcing takeaways. I mean, that's what you need that identity, Jeff, to sometimes make up for perhaps the yardage you're going to give up. And that's exactly what the Giants defense did last night.
And that identity is being built last night. You know, so we didn't know what this defense identity was.
New
coordinator, new players, this and that. That set the tone for their identity last night. Now let's carry it over to the Atlanta game and do the same thing, eliminate some of the mistakes, but these young guys are going to continue to get better. They're going to learn how to prepare better. They're going to learn the game better. The game's going to slow down for them. Guys like Unga and Collins and even Kennard. I mean, Kennard, yeah, he's a second-year player, and I know he played some games last year, but he's still a young guy. These guys are all learning, and the fact is that you know this game will become a little bit easier for them the more and more they get in that lineup and play together.
Let's head back to the lines. Dre is in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
What's going on, Figs?
What's up,
Figs? D-Ray? How's everything going?
Good, man.
What do you got for us?
Whoa.
Well, I'm going to keep this. What happened?
No, we heard some feedback. Jeff got a little scared.
I thought you had
okay.
I thought you had your phone out the door or the window.
Oh no, I'm standing outside. It's kind of windy here in Atlanta.
Okay. Understandable. So, what do you have for us, Dre?
Quick. Unger played one heck of a game, you know, but I think he still got exposed, and you can see his speed is not really up to, you know, he works on his coverage, he'll be all right. I'm not completely upset about the game, but one aspect of the game that kind of bothered me was the play of Preston Parker, because if I'm Cruz and I'm hurt and I'm trying to come back, you know, as soon as I can, that adds more pressure, and I might try to come back quicker than you know, than I'm supposed to. Outside of that, that's probably the only issue I had. You know, remember, last year, Preston Parker had the case of the dropsies, too. And then he came back strong the next game. You know, he vowed to the fans that he'll do better. But in your first game of the new season, this is where, you know, you have to prove to the coaches that letting James Jones go, who had one heck of a game, you know, in his reunion with Green Bay, you know, you have to prove to your coaches they made the right decision by keeping you.
Well,
he didn't do that.
Let me tell you something about Preston Parker. You know, when you think about, because Victor Cruz is out of the lineup, and because of the coverages that the defenses are presented against the Giant offense, you know that they're going to be covering Odell Beckham, okay? Then you got, I don't think that there's really a lot of respect for Reuben Randall with his knees. I don't think he can get off the ball, off the line of scrimmage anymore. So that leads you to the tight ends. Last night I was impressed at how the Giant offense was able to utilize the tight end with Fells and Larry Donnell. I think between them they had 8 catches last night. So that brings me to Preston Parker in that slot position. You got to be able to have somebody that's going to catch the football in that position because of what I just said to you about the tight ends and Odell Beckham. And so he knows he has to catch the football, and he knows that he has to do better. He did it last year, and then he came back and did it last night. And, Dre, you make a good point. You just came off the preseason. You just made the 53-man roster. That's not the time to go out and have the dropsies. And so now we're hoping that he gets back and gets in sync with Eli and catch. You know, when it comes down to how you perform, there's something missing. You know, all these guys are great athletes. They've been catching footballs all their life. It comes down to one thing, and that's concentration and focus, and having to be able to learn how to do that on a consistent basis. And to me, he loses his focus. I don't know if I know he's a tough guy. He's not afraid to get hit. It's just a matter of taking his eyes off the ball or something, and he needs to work on that. He really does.
Well, because he was in the right position.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of sometimes
his
the
focus.
Ball would hit off his chest.
Yeah.
Mental mistakes.
Mental. It's
those
mental.
Mishaps.
Which they always say, you know, this game is mental. It's what gets you between being an average player and being a really good player. And that's the mental aspect of the game.
All right, Dre, appreciate the
thank you,
call.
Dre. Have a good one,
thanks
Daddy.
Thanks so much for weighing in. The other thing to mention, and I understand given what James Jones did for the Packers yesterday, it's easy to compare.
Yeah.
Well, James Jones would have done this for the Giants, and this is why they should have kept him over Preston Parker. But, you know, as we were talking about last night, James Jones is going back to a system that he knows like the back of his hand. Aaron Rodgers is his quarterback. So there's no surprise that clicked immediately with respect to the Green Bay Packers. This was a player and a quarterback that were very familiar with one another, and they essentially picked up where they left off.
Well, the guy played there forever. Yeah, I mean, and you know, and how much attention did the other team, whoever they played yesterday,
the Bears,
think that James Jones is just going to come in and be the guy? Is he going to take over for Jordy Nelson? No. So they, you know, and I didn't watch the game, but the fact is, you make a good point, Lance, is that, you know, he's in a system. He knows that by the back of his hand, even though he was in Oakland last year. But who cares? I mean, when you play for a system for so long and you go to another system for a year, you're going to forget that system you were in a year quicker than one you were in 7 or 8 years. Trust me. That's just the way it works. But bottom line here is Preston Parker is a valuable asset to this team if he can catch the football. If he can't catch the football, it's going to be a problem.
And let's not forget, there's also some other competition on this roster. Jeremy Davis, who looked very good in the preseason, he's still very much in the mix. Dwayne Harris can be used as a wide receiver.
Right.
They have other options if they want to try to make some tweaks or perhaps go in a different direction.
And you know, Dwayne Harris was a pretty productive receiver for Dallas. I mean, you know, him being that fourth and fifth receiver, you know, the Giants brought him in to be a returner. But, you know, if Preston Parker can't start catching balls, then, you know, easily, like you said, we'll just move somebody else in that slot position until Vic gets back. But, you know, and I know there's going to be a lot of people asking, you know, why they let Corey Washington go and will he come back and all that kind of good stuff. You know, we're not here to talk about that because we don't make those decisions. But I do know one thing, Lance, if you continue to drop footballs like that, you're not going to have a job.
Let's head back to the lines. Kia is in Virginia. Kia, what's happening?
Hi, Kia.
Hey, guys, doing today?
Very good.
First time caller, long time listener.
Well, good to have you.
Well, welcome.
Tia. Thanks so much. What do you have for us?
Two things. First one is, first let me say, awesome job to the defense, especially those young guys flying to the ball and getting those turnovers. But first on Preston Parker, I know it's been said several times, you know, dropping the ball, key third downs. But if we notice, Coach put, you know, Jennings in the doghouse a little bit after that first fumble, but he seemed to keep Preston Parker in after those three key drops. And so I'm not sure why we couldn't make an adjustment there. Throw Randall in the slot. He's actually played in the slot last year. He coming down a stretch, he did well. Could have put Dwayne Harris on the outside. I didn't see an adjustment there, and I think that was another bad decision on Coach's part. But secondly, Eric Flowers, it seems like he had a little bit of an injury. Do we have an update on what was going on, what he heard, and is that going to impact him going forward?
Well, he finished the game, so that's a good sign. I think it was an ankle injury. I know sprained ankle, what have you, but we'll know more about that. We don't know anything more than what they were saying on the TV last night or reporting.
And so. Tom Coughlin didn't address any injuries. I mean, there weren't really any injuries of note, so that's certainly a positive. But when he does speak to the media on a conference call, I'm sure he'll have more, Kia, on Eric Flowers. But as Jeff mentioned, the fact that he got through the game, whatever it is, if he's dealing with anything, I don't think it's anything major.
That's good news. That's why we caught him, you know, hobble limping a little bit, but I was glad to see the young guy push through and keep his temperature as well.
Yeah.
You know, in that little scuffle that he had, he kept his cool, and then he pushed through the injury. So it's a good thing to see from the young guy.
Well, it's good to see the Giants come out of a game healthy. You know, I mean, really, when you talk about how what's been happening in the preseason, so this is a good sign for the health of the team going forward into the Atlanta game.
And, Key, I agree with you. I think it was a great test for Eric Flowers, you know, regardless of what Pro Football Focus graded him at. You know, this was his first opportunity, regular season experience in Dallas, dramatic atmosphere. I thought he held his own. You know, certainly he was tested here or there on the edge, but for the most part, he did very good in terms of run blocking.
He did, and I'll tell you the other thing. I'll tell you the other thing he did good at last night with the help of Rashad Jennings was the personal foul that was in the game where, you know, he didn't retaliate.
Kept his composure.
And, he retaliates there, and he gets the offsetting penalties, you know, he gets fined. But that was a smart play by him. And, you know, the guy has a quiet demeanor. And we've all had a chance to talk to him, and he doesn't say much. But, you know, on the football field, I think he does what every guy would love your coach would love to see. He does his talking with his play on the field, and that's a good sign. And I was proud of the young man from the University of Miami, my alumni.
No surprise there.
Yeah.
You got to stick together, the Hurricanes.
That's right.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And Jeff, I think you brought up a great point, and that's one of those plays where everybody focuses on Jeremy Mincy and the mental mishap that he had. But you're right. Eric Flowers, if he retaliates, remember, a lot that happens in the NFL, you always see the second guy. You don't see the first guy
that
takes the hit. You see the second guy. Jennings is wrapping both of Eric Flowers' hands behind Flowers' back, and Flowers is even pointing to the official. It didn't look like he wanted to retaliate, but Jennings was there to have veteran leadership. For a rookie, his first regular season game, to keep his composure, I think that says a lot about his maturity.
And in a critical moment of the game, okay, we just got done talking about that sequence of a play there where you had the personal foul and the clock stop. That was in the 4-minute drive in there. So, you know, that's not the time to take a personal foul penalty. Okay, and like you said, it's usually the guy that retaliates that gets the penalty. Right there, that's a 15-yard penalty back, loss of down. Okay, and now they're losing. They're losing field position by a bonehead mistake by Eric Flowers. No, he held his composure. He was able to back away. They get the 15-yard penalty, and it was a great play by the young rookie.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We check it with Joe in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
What's up, Joe?
Hi, guys. Great to talk. Yeah.
Same here, Joe.
That one, my heart's still pounding. You know, I have to pin that on Mr. Coughlin and Ben, their time management, for sure. We could have won that if they go back on that. Eli's, that rollout pass of his, if he didn't throw the ball, if he wasn't open, he should have just fell down. You know what I mean?
Like they did before
with Bradshaw. You fall down, use up the time. I was very upset with that play on DRC earlier, the roughing the penalty. Or interference. There was no interference there. What else? punting, I was very happy with the hang time. That was great.
Me too.
And but the last thing, I didn't like that squib kick at the end. We were kicking long into the end zone, and even when Dallas did run it out, they weren't making it back to the 20. When you squib kick, I understand that you don't want to give them a long gainer, but the average is they get it from the 30 to the 40 usually. And
well, they got it from the 27. So
right, and that could have made the difference in the game too.
Well, there's always the philosophies on that squib kick, and
kicking deep. We were kicking good and deep in the end zone, and besides that, and when we did, they did run it out. Especially teams were playing real good.
You know what, Joe? I'll tell you what. The squid, they should have been more conscientious of taking time off the clock by their proper clock management in that 4-minute drill, rather than trying to take just a lousy 4 seconds off the clock on a squib kick. You know, so there's other junctures in the game when you can run the clock. And I'm not a big fan of the squib kick either. I can just tell you that. But I know why they did it, to start the clock. And, fortunately, and you know what? Maybe they did it because of the way that the kickoff team was covering the whole game. They said, listen, we're going to squib down there. These guys haven't got anything on us all day. We'll give them the ball on the 25 or the 27-yard line, but we'll take 4 or 5 seconds off the clock. Who knows?
I didn't like it, not with the time that was left there. I want to give that to Eli, Romo, or anything. And then at the end of the game here, the defense, I was very happy with the defense. But I did thought there at the end where they were just dumping it off to that running back. Maybe couldn't we bring somebody else in besides a linebacker there? And Dez was out of the game too. The next guy I want to cover is Witt. That's for sure. I would have mugged him. There was no way he would have got off that line of scrimmage. So that's things there that I thought was obvious. They could have did something. And Tom definitely, I never saw him left one get away like this.
Yeah,
they did.
Me either.
They left this one get away. So that's all. So,
all right, well, we're back.
The only other good thing about it, no injuries. And the young guys, but we definitely do need another receiver there or something. Somebody with speed or something like that or something, because they're going to do the same philosophy. The tight ends are doing great. They're getting there. But they're doubling Beckham, and somebody else got to do something there to open it up. So that's all. Thank
all right,
you,
Joe,
guys.
You got it. Appreciate
Thank you, Joe. Phone call. Appreciate it.
And this is the type of game, you know, Joe bringing up the squib kick, where you can put everything under the microscope, Jeff. When you lose by a point, I mean, you could go back and look over everything. Go back to the first quarter in a drive on a 30.
Go back and talk about how they came out of the tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. Or the shoes they wore and this and that.
Hey, listen, if you think you got a beef with the squib kick in this game, how about the onside kick in this Seattle-St. Louis game? In overtime that Pete Carroll did. I mean, wow. Talk about field position. They gave him the ball on, like, the 45-yard line. I don't know. So that's
another
day.
Well, that
was
a tough loss. The Colts had a rough outing. There were a lot of teams that are in recovery mode.
No
after
question.
Struggling in week number one. And that's why we tend to overreact as fans in the NFL. But what happens, the narrative changes week to week. Teams lose 1 week, then they go on a 5-game winning streak. All of a sudden, you look at this team much differently than you did a few weeks back.
And, you know, you look at this game, and one of the earlier callers had mentioned this. You know, it's more like, you know, when the Giants lose a game like this and you feel horrible coming into work like we are today, it's usually because there was a mistake. There was a fumble or there was an interception return for a touchdown. It's very rare that we're coming into the building and talking about the Giants in a mental lapse that happened with Coach Coughlin and Eli Manning. That's, I think, to me, is what people are having a hard time with, is the fact that these guys rarely make these types of mistakes.
Uncharted territory.
No question about it. So that's why it's so tough on everybody right now.
Andrew is in Pennsylvania. Andrew, what's happening?
Andrew.
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Andrew?
Hey, I don't mean to repeat a bunch of people, but I got to talk about Preston Parker real quick, and then I want to move on to a different subject. But, like, oh, it's driving me crazy. I mean, you think about Jones and Washington. I want to like Preston Parker. I really do. He looks tough. He looks scrappy. I know you guys might not have been high on it, but when that fight happened with St. Louis last year, like, he showed he had guts. But if he's going to play wide receiver, he needs to know how to catch. Is there any way at all, if Cruz came back and for some reason they wanted to keep Preston Parker, do you think he could play DB? Because he can't play wide receiver.
Oh, wow. I have no idea. I think he should concentrate on trying to play wide receiver before he jives over. You know, but not, like I said earlier, though, this is just focus and concentration. And, you know, the guys that make it in this league have long careers continuously get better in that department. And, you know, as their skills go down, their mental capacity does it. And so that's where he has to improve on it. And that's a mental part of his game that you got to take a look at. Why is he dropping these footballs? And, you know, and that's what these coaches get paid to do. They'll study film and they'll go back and they'll have drills. They'll get them on the jug machine, this and that. But, you know, is it more reps in practice? Is it, you know, whatever it is. But critical parts of the game, those third down drops last night for Preston Parker.
And I just want to add before we let you continue, Andrew, and I'm not comparing Victor Cruz and Preston Parker, but let's not forget when Victor Cruz started out in his career, Jeff, you know, he had sometimes the case of the drop season. He nearly didn't even make the team. Remember that opener against the Washington Redskins, just like Preston Parker, target after target and just had some mental lapses. The ball was going off of his hands. Guys then bounce back. You know, that wasn't the end of Victor Cruz's career. I understand they have different resume, so once again, I'm not comparing the both, but it's just an example. Guys have had rough games. They learn from it. They do bounce back. Let's not forget, Parker had some key games last year in Seattle. He was huge. I know they didn't win that game, but there were games where Preston Parker did make some big catches and was key in filling in for players who were injured. You just want to see more consistency.
How do you remember these games?
For some reason, certain games just stick out in my head. I don't know why. Don't ask me.
You know, I've always thought that was – I mean, I talk about mental capacity. I don't have the mental capacity to remember how Preston Parker caught the ball in the Seattle Seahawks game last year. I swear to you. People ask me all the time, like, hey, do you remember when you punted in 98 and against the Falcons?
And
I'm like, what?
Like, I don't even remember being in the league in 98. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So that's impressive.
Lance. Thank you. Yeah. So what else you got, Andrew?
One thing I wanted to say real quick before I say something about Coughlin, one thing that's really making me mad, all right, I'm so happy that I've been a Giants fan all my life and I saw the 2007 Super Bowl and all that. Last night on the postgame show, and it comes up too often, I forget who it was. It was either O'Hara or Deal has to say, well, let's not forget, in 2007, we lost our first game by a point to the Cowboys. I don't care. I don't like the fact that Giants fans always want to bring up 2007 and the horrible start. And every year when we start off 0-3 or 0-6, they're like, oh, it's okay, because in 2007, we caught lightning in a bottle and it's going to happen again. That was great when it happened.
Sure.
We have to have higher expectations.
Well, listen, I'll tell you right that you can't compare the two, because, by the way, in 07, the first game, we got blown out. You know, so if you want to compare the two, and you know, I think it's a similar comparison just because Spags is here again, and that was his first year. Totally different team, totally different makeup. By the way, that 2007 team had Tuck, had OC. We had
defensive line.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? So if you want to take I'll just take two of the three that I just mentioned and bring them over to this game last night, the Giants win this game going away with those guys, right?
And the other thing I'll add, Andrew, is Cullen Jenkins in the locker room this week, I thought he had a very interesting quote. He hit on exactly what you're talking about. And reporters were saying how important it is to get off to a fast start this season, because in previous years they had struggled. And Jenkins was up front. He said, listen, we've been talking about this season in and season out. We have to win games early. So the players, the urgency factor was there. You know, regardless of what some commentators may say here or there, this team knew the importance of this game. They were not overlooking that.
Yeah. Definitely.
Now, just one more point before I take up your guys' time. This is more of a question. I love Coughlin. I'm not talking crap on Coughlin. Everybody makes a mistake. I think it was more on McAdoo anyway. But all you ever hear about, if you listen to, like, national radio and stuff like that, is how Coughlin's so old school and blah, 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 blah. To me, I don't see that anymore. Old school, you're going to line up and you're going to run. I mean, not that I want to change this at all, but you even go back to the 2007 Super Bowl. Plaxico Burress caught the ball on the fade. Why are the Giants always throwing at the goal line now? I mean, they did run it and they had success down there, but, like, I thought, like,
because every team
does.
Old
school football, you're going to be tough.
No, every team does. Look at the Cowboys. They get down in the red zone. They run the football on first down Like, we go to the bathroom every morning. I swear to you, right? And what do they do when they get inside the 10-yard line? They're throwing a football. It's because everybody, and I'm telling you about Tom Coughlin being old school. Yeah, he's old school. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you how he's old school. You don't wear white socks, okay? You wear dress socks, okay? You don't wear a t-shirt, you wear a collared shirt. All right? They got music at practice. They got the GPS system they're doing. They got a spa day. So who in the hell is saying that he's old school? He's old school in the ways that he does things internally in the building, while you travel, in the hotel, things like that. He has adapted to the culture of this young National Football League. These players are completely different. We know that. He's had a hard time doing it, trust me. But he understands he has to change with the way the times are. But one thing he'll never do is change the way he prepares for a football game. And like I said earlier, this is why it just baffles me. The preparation was there, except for that last series of plays that went down.
And Andrew, appreciate the phone
call. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks so much for chiming in. I want to try to squeeze in a few more callers here as we take you up to the top of the hour. Akil is in Brooklyn. Akil, what's happening?
Akil.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
We're good. Lance is doing well, too, by the way.
Oh, my bad. What's up, Lance? How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing well.
Overall, I think we had a really good game. And it's just, you know, that last second, you know, the last second, you know, moments in the game. But I don't want to pile on. Basically, what my question was, because one of my favorite wide receivers that I thought was up and coming, Corey Washington got cut. Well, I know he got cut because he had an injury, and, you know, they did sneak him back on, you know, an injury reserve. And what happened was he took an injury settlement, you know, so he could sign with another team. I like Preston Parker, but to me, I think Corey Washington has a better upside. Now, my question is, what are the Giants' chances of signing Corey Washington? And that's all. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a good day.
All right, Akil. Appreciate the phone call. Well, every free agent that's on the market, the Giants do their due diligence, certainly exploring their options. And now that you're past week one, you know, veterans' contracts are not necessarily guaranteed. New rules go into effect. So I'm sure the Giants, as they do all throughout the season, they always weigh their options. But, I mean, to tell you the chances that a player may return, I mean, we don't necessarily have that type of information or what they're thinking. I think right now they're content with the receiving core. Jeff, as we mentioned, there's depth. There's Dwayne Harris, there's Jeremy Davis, and Parker has familiarity with this system. There's a reason he made this roster. It's because they felt that he knew the system well, he can run the routes that they need him to do, but it's a matter of execution. And nobody is arguing that yesterday was not his best game in terms of execution, but one game doesn't define a team, and it certainly doesn't define a player. So before the Giants start to say, well, we got to make roster tweaks here or there, I think you want to see how this team recovers as well as the individual standpoint.
Well said. I just we continue to field questions on Corey Washington every week, you know. I mean, Corey Washington, he got beat out by Jeremy Davis. That's what this came down to. It wasn't between Corey Washington and Preston Parker. It was between Jeremy Davis and Corey Washington. Jeremy Davis is a draft pick. Corey Washington was a free agent. He was the cat's meow last year. He made progress. He did better in preseason this year, but the fact is he just couldn't cut the mustard. And you know, and he was a nice player. And you know, hopefully he has a nice future ahead of him. I don't know the rules on how you can bring him back now. It's injury settlement and this and that. I don't know if there's a certain time they have to wait to sign back with the original team. Because in my mind, if you're going to give a guy an injury settlement, there's got to be a rule, and I should know this,
that you can't all of a sudden
that you can't all of a sudden bring him back again, because you just gave him money to cut him, and there's a reason they do that. So I'm sure that if he has the ability to sign with anybody else, but maybe not the Giants for maybe 6 or 8 weeks or something like that. But so that's kind of where that's at, and there it is. Yeah,
I'm trying to just find out the answer. I'm reading up here about the injury settlement because it is a good question. Is there about maybe a 5 or 6 week period that has to go by? Just like you see in the NBA, for example, when a guy gets traded, they have to then wait a few more weeks if you're to trade that player again.
Oh, wow.
So it would stand to reason that under the injury settlement. We'll get some clarification here before we wrap up the show, but I want to get another call or two in as we take you up to the top of the hour. Nugs is in Minnesota. Nugs, what's happening? Nugs,
hey,
are you there?
What's going on, you guys?
Doing
very
well,
good.
Nugs.
How are
How's
you?
Everything with you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm just, you know, I was getting ready to jump off the bridge, and then I thought about it, and I said, you know, we got a few more weeks left before I take my life watching my Giants.
Hey, well, we're glad we're talking to you. And you didn't jump off of that bridge last night.
Yes.
I'm sure you're not the only one that was thinking about that, but thank God that you did it. So, you know, hey, it's just a game. It's just a game. It's only one game. We got 15 more to go, man.
Yeah. Thank God for Kettle One vodka. You know, it really takes the edge off.
No question, right? Well, although at the end of the day, you start drinking enough of that, you really start to come with some crazy, crazy ideas.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be like the last caller said. I don't want to be accused of piling on, but I'm about to do my best Jimmy Superfly Snooker impression.
Oh boy, you're at the top of the tight rope here. That's what you're doing.
Are you going on to Preston Parker pile on here? Is that what they were doing?
Well, when you see what James Jones did, it makes it kind of hard not to pile on with Preston Parker.
Sure. I mean, I get it.
I don't want to say much. I don't want to say too much more than that. We let go of James Jones, and he's a guy who's familiar with McAdoo from that Green Bay system. I think we should have been able to find somewhere for him to fit in just to help our receiving core, period, with depth. The other thing I kind of want to get on is the John Beeson, man. I mean, I know we love him because he's a veteran or whatever, and he's got leadership skills. But like I said, you got to lead on the field, man. This guy, he would have been, if he was there on that fourth down play, he would have known what Witten was trying to do. It wouldn't have gone that way. So I get
what you're saying. You know, and John is one of those guys where when he's on the field and he's healthy, he's really, really good, and he'll give you 110% every single time. He'll give you 110% even when he's on the field and he's not healthy. It's just the fact that he has a propensity to get hurt, and the injuries that he has, they're long-term injuries. They're not little nicks. You know, you got a little here and there. They seem to keep him out of the game a long time, and at some point in time, you know, that's why they're trying to develop this guy, Unga. I mean, he's an up and coming. He's a young guy, and they see a tremendous upside to him. And, you know, and he's only going to get better. I mean, he's raw. He's young. He's going to make mistakes. He made a mistake last night on that winning touchdown drive with Witten. But the fact is, when John Beeson gets back on the field, we know what he can do. He just has to stay on the field.
And, Nugs, keep in mind, that's his first NFL game ever.
Yeah.
And the fact that he led the team in tackles and got an interception, I mean, that's impressive for
no
his
question.
First game. But you do bring up a good point, as Jeff mentioned. You know, John Beeson's the more experienced linebacker. So he's dealt with Witten many more times than Unga has. He's seen him on film many more times. So clearly that's going to be a difference maker. But for a guy that played his first NFL game, all things considered, it's hard to sit here and criticize him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I mean, it was not that game was not lost by Unga. I tend to agree with Jeff. That game was lost with us snapping the ball with 15 seconds still left on the clock, and we have nothing to prove. We don't need any more points. We need this clock to run down. And if Dallas had 20, 25. 30 less seconds on the clock, they would have still been at the 20-yard line, heaving it up into our umbrella defense.
Your umbrella defense. Kind of sounds like a cliche. Our umbrella defense, yeah. In the dark corners of the stadium, the Giants rolled out their umbrella defense.
I don't know. Is that a terminology you heard before, Jeff, in the classroom, an umbrella defense?
Well, that's basically what it was.
Yes.
We just cover the whole field.
There you go.
Just one more point. I'm going to take you guys' response off the line. And when Beeson does come back healthy, I want us to leave Unga in there.
Sure.
It's the youth movement. It's time to take –
to make a change. I think that Carolina, they got the best out of John Beeson that anybody is ever going to get out of this guy. And if he could be a good backup, he could be a good veteran presence on the sideline, and you know, do some spot work or whatever to spell Unga. But I would just like to see us go with the youth movement with our linebackers, because, like I said, when we first got John Beeson, I loved John Beeson when he was in Carolina. I was like, if we're going to get that John Beeson, we're going back to the playoffs. But if we're getting the John Beeson that they cut because he was always hurt, then that just became our problem. And that's what it's jumping up to bite us now. And for the last 2-3 years, I've been listening to callers coming in, calling up, and you guys periodically are like, yeah, he gives us veteran leadership. He gives us veteran leadership. He gives us veteran leadership. But guess what? In the middle of a war, if the leader of your troops is in the medic's office while we're under live fire, he's not doing us no good there.
Right.
He's not doing us no good there. We can sit and look at all the recon we want to, but if he's not the guy under fire taking the bullets with his men right there, because John Beeson, the middle linebacker, is the brain of your defense. Along with your safeties, but the middle linebacker is the brain of your defense. He understands what's going on in front of him. He understands what's going on behind him, and he understands what he has to do to make everybody better, a.k.a. Antonio Pierce. You know, I will never stop screaming, we need another Antonio Pierce. And John Beeson has the possibility to be that guy, but the thing that Antonio Pierce gave us that Beeson didn't give us was like 5-6 years of complete great health. So.
Yep.
Well, Nuggs, appreciate the call, and that's why they're developing a number of these young players like Devon Kennard, like Unga, so that in the event somebody does go down, they have versatility back there. And to answer his question, Jeff, you know, even when Beeson comes back, knowing Spags, he's going to utilize as many linebackers as he can. You know, it's not as if one player is just going to drop out of the rotation.
Sure, sure. And you know, with Beeson, is the, you know, the Panthers traded him for a reason. You know, they just didn't give away a great football player for no reason at all. They knew about his injuries. Then the Giants knew about his injuries, too. And they were just hoping that, you know, that the guy could skate through them and nothing was serious going to happen. And unfortunately, John has not, you know, lived up to that capability of being able to stay on the field. And, you know, once he comes back in the lineup, which maybe should be next week, who knows. But to your point, Lance, you know, when you get the play out of Unga that he did, you know, you can't just go sit him on the bench. You're going to try to find, you know, trying to find a spot for him.
Real life experience.
But you may not be able to. And if that's the case, then he'll play special teams and go from there. So we'll see.
Let's get to at least one more call here. Brandon is in New York. Brandon, what's happening?
Hey, fellas, how we doing? So there's tons of positives to take from this game, but I don't want to get into that. What I want to talk about is, I thought when we got these linebackers in the offseason, that JT Thomas was going to, even though Unga played an awesome game, I thought JT Thomas was going to end up being a backup for Beeson in the middle, and then you have Castillo on the outside and the weak side instead of bringing, you know, Unga in his first NFL game. So I wanted to get your input on that. And then also, I think, you know, at the end of the game, we all know what happened, but I think Williams as a power runner, you should always have him in there at the end of the game when you're at the goal line. And also, we got to see more of Harris. I love the end around. We got to see more of him as a wide receiver, and also our rookie Davis, because I think they can both. I think all our wide receivers are good enough to play inside and outside.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get your.
Well, I think with the linebackers, you know, JT Thomas predominantly was an inside linebacker, but I think they thought that he would be a better fit on the outside for this system. And Ben, because they had John Beeson here, but you know, I think Unga just surprised a lot of people the way that he moved into that position. And with Castillas, you know, Castillas, he's a nominal player. He's not a starter in this league. He's been a special teams guy. That's kind of the reason they brought him in. JT Thomas also plays special teams, but you know, you never know. I mean, Unga, if where they're going to move him around or how they do it, I don't know. But these other two guys are there to play special teams. And JT Thomas, I mean, he's a starting linebacker. You know, he's going to do as much as he can get, what we can get out of him as a linebacker. I can't remember some of the other questions you had. As far as the other receivers, Yeah, I mean, this is a you got a lot of depth here, but there's only three or four guys that can play on Sunday, you know. So
like you get on the field at
exactly.
The same time too.
So but you know the end of rounds and things like that. Those are plays where you sprinkle them in during the season. You can't have them every single game because teams will know you're going to be doing it all the time. So the end of round to Harris can put the ball in his hands because he's that type of a playmaker.
And remember, sometimes when you get too fancy, and Brandon, appreciate the phone call, like what the Pittsburgh Steelers did on Thursday night when they were moving the ball and then they did that trickery play,
yeah.
And it can kill the continuity on offense.
Sure,
you
get
have
a
to
sack
and
there. And, yeah,
when
yeah.
you want to implement that. In terms of the linebackers also, I think the philosophy, Jeff, was they wanted to get the top three linebackers on the field at the same time. And remember,
right.
Unga has the most experience in the middle. So if JT Thomas has versatility, he can play in the middle and the outside.
Correct.
In order to get those two on the field at the
exactly.
same time, you put Unga in the middle and you put Thomas to the outside.
Right.
You know, Thomas backed up Paul Posluszny with Jacksonville last season, but in addition to that, the Jaguars also used him on the outside, and Kennard, we know, can play on the outside, he can play in the middle. That's why it's so important to have all of these linebackers play multiple positions.
Which they do.
So when one guy goes down, you have options. But Unga right now, Jeff, I think on this team is mainly looked at as a middle linebacker
no
as
question.
Opposed to an outside.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the size really to play that outside linebacker position, but he's got the speed. He's the smart guy, and he had a great game yesterday.
Before we wrap up, one caller was referring to the injury settlement situation, and
oh,
I did get
yeah.
the answer
oh, okay.
to that. So this is
were
generic terms here. You were exactly right on the money.
Oh.
There has to be a time period that you have to wait to re-sign a player. Now, injury settlements are going to vary.
Yeah,
depending
yeah.
on whatever the
settlement.
Agreement is.
It's
a settlement.
Settlement.
So we don't know the specifications of this one, but the bottom line is, depending on whatever the injury settlement was, let's say it covered 3 weeks, it covered 6 weeks,
yeah.
you have to wait. You also may have to wait till the guy gets healthy, too.
Oh, well, that's there's a settlement. So that settlement, it could be a two-week settlement,
there
a six-week.
You,
you know what it is. The settlement is determined by the injury.
Correct.
So if you have a torn labrum in your shoulder, the doctors say this is a 6 to 8 week recovery. They're going to settle with you for that 6 or 8 weeks. That's
and then
is.
There's a mathematical equation. For example, in this article from the National Football Post, it says for a player who did a 3 week, three game settlement, this is just a hypothetical, his team can't sign him back until after week 9.
Oh, wow. So it's time. It's is it? Wow.
So it may involve a few details. It may involve the money aspect. It may involve the injury. The bottom line is time has to go by before you can bring a player back. So with respect to Corey Washington, using him as an example, with that settlement, you can't bring him back tomorrow. You
right.
have to wait some time.
And
I don't
wonder
know
what
the
his settlement was. Was it a 6 week settlement?
Well, they didn't give out
they
the
didn't do it, so
exact
they know.
Details to that. But the bottom line is you can't bring it back tomorrow.
But he can week. Go he can go sign with another team tomorrow.
Correct. That he can.
That he can, okay.
He can go with another team, but as far as coming back to the Giants, that you
right.
need to allow some
because
time.
Because they have determined the settlement figure for him to be off the roster for that long. It would not be fair to pay him a 6 week settlement. He comes back 3 weeks, he's already been paid for six. Okay.
That's part of the salary cap
gotcha.
And the rules and regulations and so forth.
There you
so,
go.
There we go.
That's what
we
the lawyers get paid
down.
Big bucks to come up with this type of language.
Indeed. Very convoluted
we
language.
We just break it down for you. We don't make it up. We find it. And thanks for joining us today.
I don't think
way.
You'd want to make it up, to be honest with you.
No, I don't.
No, you don't want to get into that.
No, I do not. I do not. I want to be your partner on this show and talk about football. I do not want to be making football rules and litigation stuff.
Sounds good to me. Appreciate all the phone calls. I know we didn't get to much on Twitter. We were monitoring it. We'll try to answer that off the air, but certainly appreciate all the feedback. It was a tough loss, but the Giants are going to get back to business. They'll have an off day tomorrow, Wednesday. They'll start preparing for the Atlanta Falcons. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every day here at noon Eastern on Giants.com. For Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Have a good one.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Jacksonville on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.